Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1029. The Will to Create Man Anew. Eugenics, Past, Present, and Future. This is being recorded on October 23rd of the year 2018. The first part of the title of the program, The Will to Create Man Anew, comes from a quote from Adolf Hitler. I'm going to paraphrase the first part of that slightly. The last part is verbatim. Hitler once intoned that those who see in National Socialism only a political movement have missed the point. It is more. It is much more. It is nothing less than the will to create man anew. And obviously that was Hitler speaking in the 1930s, and so the biases that he had were the biases that he had. However, as I have discussed so many times, not only did the Third Reich not dissolve into thin air at the end of World War II, but basically it went underground, and its key elements were fused into the Western Alliance for the Cold War. The Christian West concept that I talked about in AFA 37 became a reality. The all-important Galen spy outfit, along with Project Paperclip, brought not only the entire Third Reich espionage establishment into the CIA and Western Intel, but also brought in its top military scientists as well. In fact, some programs that had been ongoing at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, one of the subsidiaries of which became the primary eugenics organization for Nazi Germany, the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, was capitalized largely by the Rockefeller Foundation. Josef Mengele, for example, owed his posting to Auschwitz to do his medical experiments to the eugenics movement and to his tutor at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. As we looked at in For the Record 664, when Mengele was doing his work on twins at Auschwitz, he would generate paperwork on the experiments, which a copy of which was then sent to the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. Some of the programs continued and apace, and the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute was then renamed the Max Planck Institute, which it is to this day. Many of the top Nazi scientists, including war criminals of the First Order and SS men, continued working for the West under Project Paperclip. We talked about that in many programs, including For the Record 606 and 912 and 1012. And we, in turn, have noted that Nazis were put into power at all levels in the post-war, quote, new, unquote, Germany, and that basically with the remarkable and deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the economic structure, the corporate structure, and the political structure of the Third Reich continued apace, underground, linked to the political and national security and espionage establishments of the West, the GOP or the Republican Party, or Republican Party in particular. In turn, we have spoken in many programs, including For the Record 664 and Miscellaneous Archive Show M12, among others, and some of our interviews with Wesley Smith. And also some of our interviews with Peter Lavenda. We have talked about eugenics and the profound influence of eugenics on the Third Reich's racial policies and its ultimate extermination programs. What we are going to be doing in this program, I was debating about whether to start with old material and then begin talking about newer things, or to start with the newer things and then track back to some things that we spoke about in, among other programs, our last broadcast, 1028 Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. And I opted for the latter, or the former, rather, option. We're going to take a look at what eugenics and science and genetic engineering may bring to human beings. And this is, I think, to be seen against the background of global warming, an EPA which now is not going to pay any attention to the inputs of science. This was something that Trump's EPA has decided to do. News about that was eclipsed by the Brett Kavanaugh circus. Things like that, and the deregulation of many things that will ultimately put mutagens into the human body via food, pesticides, pharmaceuticals, perhaps. These things and global warming bode very, very poorly indeed for human beings. And we're going to be taking a look at what some people feel can be done to create superhumans, or what Hitler referred to as supermen, bearing in mind that the economic and political and pseudo-scientific and scientific foundations of the Third Reich are to be found in the West, which generated the capital and much of the political sympathy for fascism, and in particular, the eugenics legislation and programs in the U.S. and elsewhere served as the foundation for the Third Reich's eugenics program and ultimately Axion T4, the Third Reich's euthanasia programs, which in turn led directly to their extermination programs. Again, Hitler said that National Socialism or Nazism was nothing less than the will to create man anew. And with some of the apocalyptic things now bearing down on most of us, again, from poisons in the environment, poisons in the food via the deregulation of the food industry, poisons from deregulated pharmaceuticals, or mutagens from deregulated pharmaceuticals, other forms of degenerative disease from all of these things, I think that the odds we all face are very, very daunting indeed. However, those who do not see the rest of us as their equals, either in terms of potential or, frankly, in terms of rights, are quite comfortable with the idea of most of us dying while they thrive. And so we are going to take a look at things that are harbingers of, quote, the will or manifestations of the will to create man anew. Some important musings on that came from the late brilliant Professor Stephen Hawking, an article in The Guardian of October 14th of 2018 by Sarah Marsh, M-A-R-S-H, called Essays Reveal Stephen Hawking Predicted Race of, quote, Superhumans, unquote. And we will evaluate this against the horrifying headlines. This, I think, should be evaluated against the horrifying headlines of what is taking place in terms of environment and the U.S. and global economy, and the things that are being developed by science, and also the will on the part of people like Peter Thiel, a top advisor to Donald Trump, a major stockholder in Facebook, someone who thinks that democracy is inimical to wealth creation, and who does not believe that women should have the right to vote. Their will to create man anew is something that is very, very real to them, and they are doing every bloody thing possible to see to it that they survive. And, well, the rest of us, not so much in the parlance of the time. Again, from The Guardian of October 14th, of 2018, Essays Reveal Stephen Hawking Predicted Race of Superhumans by Sarah Marsh. The late physicist and author Professor Stephen Hawking has caused controversy by suggesting a new race of superhumans could develop from wealthy people choosing to edit their and their children's DNA. Hawking, the author of A Brief History of Time, who died in March, made the predictions in a collection of articles and essays. The scientist presented the possibility that genetic engineering could create a new species of superhuman that could destroy the rest of humanity. The essays, published in the Sunday Times, were written in preparation for a book that will be published on Tuesday. This last couple of sentences again. The scientist, Stephen Hawking, presented the possibility that genetic engineering could create a new species of superhuman that could destroy the rest of humanity. The essays published in the Sunday Times were written in preparation for a book that will be published on Tuesday. Quote, I am sure that during this century, people will discover how to modify both intelligence and instincts such as aggression, unquote, he wrote. Again, quoting, laws will probably be passed against genetic engineering with humans, but some people won't be able to resist the temptation to improve human characteristics such as memory, resistance to disease, and length of life, unquote. In Brief Answers to the Big Questions, Hawking's Final Thoughts on the Universe, the physicist suggested wealthy people would soon be able to choose to edit genetic makeup to create superhumans with enhanced memory, disease resistance, intelligence, and longevity. Hawking raised the prospect that breakthroughs in genetics will make it attractive for people to try to improve themselves, with implications for unimproved humans, unquote. Quote, once such superhumans appear, there will be significant political problems with unimproved humans who won't be able to compete, unquote, he wrote. Again, quoting, presumably they will die out or become unimportant. Indeed, there will be a race of self-designing beings who are improving at an ever-increasing rate, unquote. The comments refer to techniques such as CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R hyphen, Cas9, capital C-A-S-9, a DNA editing system that was invented 6 years ago, allowing scientists to modify harmful genes or add new ones. Again, noting here that, quoting a couple of key sentences, the scientist presented the possibility that genetic engineering could create a new species of superhuman that could destroy the rest of humanity, skipping down. Once such superhumans appear, there will be significant political problems with unimproved humans who won't be able to compete, he wrote. Presumably they will die out or become unimportant. Instead, there will be a race of self-designing beings who are improving at an ever-increasing rate. I would add, that they may actually be killed. And beyond that, as we will see, as we actually did see in connection with the Third Reich, using pseudoscience, some groups of people were deemed to be fundamentally inferior, non-Aryans, and they were variously inconvenienced from being turned into official second-class citizens and economic entities to being outright killed, sometimes first the one and then the other. In terms of genetic engineering, recall that in numerous shows, AFA number 16, and for the record, AFA number 39, for the record 912, and for the record 1012, we took a look at an excerpt from testimony from the House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing for the defense budget for fiscal year 1969-70. And in it, a Dr. MacArthur discussed the possibilities of using genetic engineering and applying it to biological warfare, saying that this could be done to create a new organism which, among other things, quote, would be refractory to the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we normally depend for our relative freedom from infectious disease. That is basically the textbook definition of AIDS. And as we looked at, again, in, for the record, 912, 1012, and also AFA 39, as well as, for the record, 606, purebred Northern Europeans, or, quote, Aryans, are the only group of people, some of whom have a recessive gene that makes them immune to infection by the AIDS virus. This, for an African monkey virus, is extraordinary and in and of itself almost certainly a manifestation of the application of genetic engineering to biological warfare. Again, we went into that at great length in the aforementioned shows, AFA 16 and 39, for the record shows 606, 912, and 1012. Keeping in mind what Professor Stephen Hawking said, we are going to take a look at the following, and we're going to, in a sense, take what Stephen Hawking was talking about and what Hitler spoke about in connection with the will to create man anew. And we're going to bring it, as Bob Dylan said, bringing it all back home. Home in this case where I am based here in the Silicon Valley. The following article is from the New Statesman of August 25th of 2017 by Sanjana, or Sanjana, S-A-N-J-A-N-A, Varghese, V-A-R-G-H-E-S-E. The first men to conquer death will create a new social order, a terrifying one. And it reads, in the 2011 New Yorker profile, Peter Thiel, tech philanthropist and billionaire, surmised that, quote, probably the most extreme forms of inequality. In the 2011 New Yorker profile, Peter Thiel, tech philanthropist and billionaire, surmised that, quote, probably the most extreme form of inequality is between people who are alive and people who are dead, unquote. While he may not be technically wrong, Thiel and other eccentric wealthy tech celebrities such as Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg have taken the next step to counteract that inequality by embarking on a quest to live forever. Thiel and many like him have been investing in research on life extension, part of transhumanism, drawing on fields as diverse as neurotechnology, artificial intelligence, biomedical engineering, and philosophy. Transhumanists believe that the limitations of the human body and mortality can be transcended by machines and technology. Last couple of sentences again. Thiel and other eccentric, wealthy tech celebrities such as Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, I would note that Thiel and Zuckerberg, of course, are tied into Facebook, which worked with Cambridge Analytica to put Donald Trump in office. Thiel and other eccentric, wealthy tech celebrities such as Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg have taken the next step to counteract that inequality by embarking on a quest to live forever. Thiel and many like him have been investing in research on life extension, part of transhumanism. Drawing on fields as diverse as neurotechnology, artificial intelligence, biomedical engineering, and philosophy, transhumanists believe that the limitations of the human body and mortality can be transcended by machines and technology. And I would add that genetic engineering may be one of those technologies. Continuing, the ultimate aim is immortality. Some believe this is achievable by 2045. Of course, humans have long harnessed technology from vaccinations to smartphones to improve and extend our lives. But that doesn't admit you into the transhumanist club. Wanting to live forever and possessing vast sums of money and time to research does. The hows and whens of transhumanism are matters of debate. Some advocate the singularity, unquote, a form of artificial superintelligence which will encompass all of humanity's knowledge that our brains will then be uploaded to. Others believe in anti-aging methods like cryonics, freezing your body after death until such a time when you can be revived. Transhumanism is no longer a fringe movement either. DARPA, the U.S. government's research arm into advanced weaponry, created a functional prototype of a super soldier exoskeleton in 2014, which will be fully functional in 2018, and is researching the possibility of an artificial human brain. Quote, transhumanism doesn't have much to say about social questions to the extent that they see the world changing. It's nearly always in a business-as-usual way. Techno-capitalism continues to deliver its excellent bounties, and the people who benefit from the current social arrangement continue to benefit from it, unquote, says Mark O'Connell, the author of To Be a Machine, who followed various transhumanists in Los Angeles. Quote, you basically can't separate transhumanism from capitalism, an idea that is so enthusiastically pursued by Musk and Peter Thiel and by the founders of Google, is one that needs to be seen as a mutation of capitalism, not a cure for it. I'm going to interrupt the reading at this point. I'm going to come back and reread this. This, I think, should be seen against the background of fascism itself. Mussolini, the world's first fascist, said, Il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. And fascism was described as the corporate state. A friend of mine once, he described fascism as, quote, capitalism on full auto, unquote. In other words, capitalism, a normal assault rifle, has what is known as selective fire. You can opt for semi-automatic or fully automatic or full auto. And using that as a metaphor for capitalism, he observed again that fascism is capitalism on full auto, unquote. And I think if fascism is capitalism on full auto, then transhumanism, as Mark O'Connell describes it here, would be seen as maybe a battalion of infantry, all of whose weapons were on full auto. So bearing that in mind, il fascismo e il corporatismo, as Mussolini said. Fascism is corporatism, or fascism is capitalism on full auto. Consider again the following, repeating this last paragraph. Quote, transhumanism doesn't have much to say about social questions. To the extent that they say the world, to the extent that they see the world changing, it is nearly always in a business as usual way. Techno-capitalism continues to deliver its excellent bounties, and the people who benefit from the current social arrangement continue to benefit from it, says Mark O'Connell, the author of To Be a Machine, who followed various transhumanists in Los Angeles. You basically can't separate transhumanism from capitalism, an idea that is so enthusiastically pursued by Musk and Peter Thiel and by the founders of Google, is one that needs to be seen as a mutation of capitalism, not a cure for it, unquote. Silicon Valley is characterized by a blind belief in technological progress, a disregard for social acceptability, and an emphasis on individual success. It is no surprise, then, that it is here that the idea of living forever seems most desirable. Musk has publicly declared that we have to merge with artificially intelligent machines that overtake humanity in order to survive. Again, Musk has publicly declared that we have to merge with artificially intelligent machines that overtake humanity in order to survive. Ray Kurzweil, K-U-R-Z-W-E-I-L, the inventor and futurist who pioneered the singularity, is now an engineer at Google. O'Connell points out that, quote, you'd have to be coming from a particularly rarefied privilege to look at the world today and make the assessment, as someone like Thiel does, that the biggest problem we face as a species is the fact that people die of old age, unquote. On an even more basic level, a transhumanist society would undoubtedly be shaped by the ideals of those who created it and those who came before it. Zoltan Istvan, Istvan, the transhumanist candidate for governor of California, told Tech Insider that, quote, a lot of the most important work in longevity is coming from a handful of the billionaires, around six or seven of them, unquote. Immortality, as defined by straight white men, could draw out cycles of oppression, without old attitudes dying off and replaced by the impatience of youth. Social change might become impossible. Artificial intelligence has already been shown to absorb the biases of its creators. Uploading someone's brain into a clone of themselves doesn't make them less likely to discriminate. Thiel and Musk, for example, identify as libertarians and have frequently suggested that taxes are obsolete and that government military spending needs to be curbed and put into life-enhancing technologies. Good luck with that, Thiel and Musk. Donald Trump doesn't seem to agree with you. Continuing, Thiel himself is a Donald Trump supporter. A one-time associate, Michael Anisimov, A-N-I-S-S-I-M-O-V, previous media officer at Machine Intelligence Research Institute, a Thiel-funded artificial intelligence think tank, has published a white nationalist manifesto. In the 2013 interview, Anisimov said that there are already significant differences in intelligence between the races, and that a transhumanist society would inevitably lead to, quote, people lording it over others in a way that has never been seen before in history. One more time. Michael Anisimov, a one-time associate of Peter Thiel, previous media officer at Machine Intelligence Research Institute, a Thiel-funded AI think tank, has published a white nationalist manifesto. In a 2013 interview, Anisimov said that there were already significant differences in intelligence between the races, and that a transhumanist society would inevitably lead to, quote, people lording it over others in a way that has never been seen before in history, unquote. It doesn't take much to guess who would be doing the lording, unquote. Again, quoting, the first enhanced humans will not be ordinary people. They'll be the people who have already made these ordinary people economically obsolete through automation. They'll be tech billionaires, unquote, says O'Connell. If those who form society in the age of transhumanism are men like Musk and Thiel, it's probable that this society will have few social safety nets, one more time. If those who form society in the age of transhumanism are men like Musk and Thiel, it's probable that this society will have few social safety nets. There will be an uneven rate of technological progress globally. Even a post-human society can replicate the unequal global wealth distribution which we see today. In some cities and countries, inhabitants may live forever, while in others, the residents die of malnutrition. If people don't die off, the environmental consequences from widespread natural resource devastation to unsustainable energy demands would be widespread. I would add something of a subsidiary element, again, with an EPA that, as was revealed in the New York Times, but sadly eclipsed by the Brett Kavanaugh circus, the EPA is no longer going to be, the Environmental Protection Agency is no longer going to be taking any information from its science office. I've forgotten the formal title. The point being that the EPA will not take any valid scientific input and take that into account in putting into effect its regulations. With deregulation, again, of food, of pharmaceuticals, and with global warming, and with the easing of workplace safety regulations, all of this part of the libertarian agenda of Donald Trump and company, basically there are going to be an awful lot of very sick people with cancer or some other degenerative disease, people who have been injured in industrial accidents. It will take time for these things to manifest when people begin ingesting carcinogens or other mutagens. It takes a while, sometimes decades, for those things to manifest. But there is going to come a time when this country's health infrastructure is going to be completely overwhelmed. It will simply be overwhelmed by the number of horribly sick people, again, with cancer, you name it, people who have been maimed in industrial accidents, to properly care for them. The Nazi extermination programs began with their T4 program, Aktion T4. That was named for the Tugendstrasse 4 building, which was the office for this, the Berlin address for the office for this. It began by killing very old people, by killing people with disabilities. It began with the Knauer case, in which a couple named Knauer, K-N-A-U-E-R, or Knauer, had a very badly birth-deformed young girl, and they petitioned Hitler for permission to have the child put to sleep because they simply said euthanized, killed, because they could not afford to care for the child. And Hitler, in his merciful beneficence, granted permission for the child to be killed. This opened the legal door for killing. As we have looked at in, among other programs, our interviews with Wesley Smith, the legalization of physician-assisted suicide has opened that door. And I am of the opinion that the future of health care for all but the wealthy will be physician-assisted suicide. People simply will not have the money to care for very sick people, and it will be economically feasible. It will be the corporatist thing to do to kill them, while other people will become the superhumans envisioned by Stephen Hawking in a critical way, talking about genetic altering, or people like Mr. Anisimov, Michael Anisimov, Peter Thiel, and others who see using technology to accomplish the same thing. I think those will work hand in hand, and I think we are reaching, basically barring a serious change, a sea change in our direction, we are reaching the apotheosis of our civilization and our species. And of course, keep in mind global warming. Climate change is a reality that will in and of itself begin killing large numbers of people. Plus, it will spawn new parasites, new diseases, and help accelerate not only storm damage, but droughts, famine, and other things. And I think that the new world order is very likely to be death for most of us who are not wealthy. We're going to move from that look at a future which is seen as coming by Stephen Hawking, and not only coming, but desirable and achievable by the likes of Peter Thiel and his associate Michael Anisimov and others. And we're going to begin looking at not only things that happened in the past, but things that are happening at the relatively pedestrian level of burgeoning fascism in this country, because indeed the perversion of the results of genetic research is now being popularized by various white supremacist groups, and this is in turn being fit into the old white supremacist, quote, Aryan supremacist, unquote, ideology of National Socialism and white supremacy in general. Looking at this against the background not only of what of our first two articles, but also against the background of what is taking place, this from the New York Times of October 18th of 2018, an article by Amy Harmon, H-A-R-M-O-N, geneticists see work distorted for racist ends, and it reads in part, nowhere on the agenda of the annual meeting of the American Society of Human Genetics being held in San Diego this week is a topic plaguing many of its members, the recurring appropriation of the field's research in the name of white supremacy. This first sentence again. Nowhere on the agenda of the annual meeting of the American Society of Human Genetics being held in San Diego this week is a topic plaguing many of its members, the recurring appropriation of the field's research in the name of white supremacy. Quote, sticking your neck out on political issues is difficult, said Jennifer Wagner, a bioethicist and president of the group's Social Issues Committee, who had sought to convene a panel on the racist misuse of genetics and found little traction for that. But the specter of the field's ignominious past, which includes support for the American eugenics movement, looms large for many geneticists in light of today's white identity politics. They also worry about how new tools that are allowing them to hone in on the genetic basis of hot-button traits like intelligence will be misconstrued to fit racist ideologies. In recent months, some scientists have spotted distortions of their own academic papers in far-right internet forums. Others have fielded confused queries about claims of white superiority wrapped in the jargon of human genetics. Misconceptions about how genes factor into America's stark racial disparities have surfaced in the nation's increasingly heated arguments over school achievement gaps, immigration, and policing, skipping down. Already, some of these audiences are flaunting DNA ancestry test results indicating exclusively European heritage as though they were racial ID cards. They are celebrating traces of Neanderthal DNA not found in people with only African ancestry. And they are trading messages with the coded term race realism, unquote, which takes oxygen from the claim that the liberal scientific establishment has obscured the truth about biological racial differences. And while much of current white nationalist rhetoric is framed in terms of preserving a white cultural identity, experts say it relies on a familiar narrative of immutable biological differences. On a YouTube talk show earlier this year, for instance, Gavin McInnes, founder of the Proud Boys, whose appearance set off a brawl outside a Republican club in Manhattan last week, echoed the pet white supremacist theory that the environmental challenges of cold winters explain the supposed higher intelligence of Northern Europeans. There's been a fair amount of publicity about the Proud Boys and their street combat with, quote, Antifa, unquote. Who knows who the black masked Antifa people really are. I would say that they're probably the best friends fascism ever had. In my line of endeavor, one comes up against three basic categories of opposition, and those are the three A's: agents, assets, and a-holes. And I would be willing to bet that large numbers of, quote, Antifa, unquote, are agents provocateurs. They are undoubtedly seen as assets, and a large number of them are quite obviously a-holes. In any event, Antifa are the best friends fascism ever had, and they serve as a perfect, an absolutely perfect foil for the likes of Gavin McInnes, whether they are, quote, anarchists, unquote, or communists of various iterations. they're just perfect, straight from central casting. And so do note here not only the distortion of genetic research to justify at a pedestrian level the Nazi slash fascist slash white supremacist activism of the likes of Gavin McInnes or others, or Jared Taylor of American Renaissance. But note here the unwillingness on the part of genetic scientists to engage these people. One of the things that has always benefited fascism is the unwillingness of scholars and I'm sorry, but what I generally regard as professional honor students to engage at an operational level. They'd rather stick to their ivory towers and pretend that they're really not responsible for what is taking place around them. Now, continuing with our discussion and reviewing articles that we talked about last week, from the Forward publication of June 28th of 2018 by Avia Aviya Kushner, KUSHMER, are 14 and 88 Nazi dog whistles in border security document, or just numbers. This refers to a posting on the Department of Homeland Security website, which had the title, "We Must Secure the Border and Build the Wall to Make America Safe." Again, that had 14 words and was quite reminiscent of the 14 words minted by Order member and Allenburg murder getaway car driver David Lane. "We must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children." The author of the DHS Post also said, "On average, out of 88 claims that pass the credible fear screening. Fewer than 13 will ultimately result in the grant of asylum. And the words 14, referring to the 14 words, and the word and 88 often appear together in various Nazi symbology and documentation. 88 derived from the immediate post-World War II occupation of Germany when the salute Heil Hitler was forbidden. So Nazis would say 88 because H is the eighth word in the alphabet, and that is how they would get around that. And as the author here and others have noted, the use of 88 claims and fewer than 13, obviously talking about 14 in parentheses, will be ultimately given a grant of asylum, is something of a subtle plain referencing of 14 and 88. I believe this was no accident, but is indeed a dog whistle. And there are a lot of reasons to assume that is the case, although I obviously do not agree with the philosophies of people like this. It has been my experience that people in the so-called progressive sector are by and large idiots. And I think people on the far right are far too often, although I don't agree with their philosophy, they have a hell of a lot more brains and operational savvy than people in the so-called progressive sector, who basically couldn't tell a dirt road from a chicken with lips. And I think they know exactly what they're talking about here. And there is every reason to assume that there are people in the Department of Homeland Security and people having to do with the Trump immigration policies that are of this mentality. Reviewing another article or part of that that we looked at last week from The Atlantic of August 28th of 2018 by Rosie, R-O-S-I-E, Gray, G-R-A-Y. Emails link former Homeland Security official to white nationalists, unquote. In the past 2 years, leaders of an emboldened white nationalism have burst into the forefront of national politics and coalesced around the so-called alt-right subculture as they have endeavored to make their ideology part of the mainstream. Recent developments have shed light on previously unknown connections between white nationalist activists and the Trump administration. Now, the Department of Homeland Security has denounced, quote, all forms of violent extremism, unquote, following the resignation of a policy analyst who had connections with white nationalists, according to leaked emails obtained by The Atlantic. The emails show that the official, Ian M. Smith, had in the past been in contact with the group that included known white nationalists as they planned various events. On one of the email threads, the address of the alt-right white nationalist leader Richard Spencer is included, as well as Smith's. Another group of recipients included Smith, as well as Jared Taylor, the founder of the white nationalist publication American Renaissance, who calls himself a, quote, white advocate, unquote. The messages given to The Atlantic by a source to whom they were forwarded paint a picture of the social scene in which white nationalists gathered for an alt-right Toastmasters night in 2016 and organized dinner parties and visits from out-of-town friends. And they provide a glimpse into how a group that included hardcore white nationalists was able to operate relatively incognito in the wider world, particularly in conservative circles. Well, the Galen Organization and its subsidiary elements like the OUNB, the Romanian Iron Guard, and others have long been part of the Republican Party dating back to the genesis of the Crusade for Freedom. In the immediate aftermath of World War II, the Republican Party itself is inextricably linked with the Crusade for Freedom. It was the godchild of Alan Dulles, who was the speechwriter for Thomas Dewey in 1948. It was implemented by Alan Dulles' protege, Richard Nixon. The chief spokesperson for the Crusade for Freedom was Ronald Reagan, the person who engineered the State Department machinations to bring these Nazis into the U.S. was William Casey, Ronald Reagan's campaign manager and CIA director, and the person who installed that Nazi element of the GOP as a permanent branch of the Republican Party, whereas previously it had only coalesced during presidential election years, was George Herbert Walker Bush, the man for whom CIA headquarters is named. In just that group, you have Alan Dulles, who was director of the CIA for many, many years, Richard Nixon, two times elected vice president, twice elected president, Ronald Reagan, who was elected president twice, William Casey, director of the CIA and Reagan's campaign manager, Nixon's chairman of the SEC, and you have George Herbert Walker Bush, twice elected vice president and once president, and for whom CIA headquarters is named, and he ran the CIA. So this stuff about, wow, shocking, I mean, whoa, Nazis and white nationalists were able to move in conservative circles. Why, my God, I'm shocked, to learn that there is gambling going on in this establishment. Again, it just, well, it's what the brilliant political comedian Mort Saul said in his autobiography, Heartland, in 1976. By the way, Mort Saul was one of Jim Garrison's investigators. When Mort Saul observed the quote, "How many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie?" Indeed. And as we can see, Ian Smith was not alone in his position. From CNN, an article by Maria Santana, S-A-N-T-A-N-A, from April 12th of 2017, hardline anti-immigration advocates hired at two federal agencies. So Ian Smith had company. John Feer, F-E-E-R, a former legal policy analyst for the Center for Immigration Studies, or CIS, has been hired as advisor to Thomas D. Holman, H-O-N-A-N, the acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, according to Homeland Security spokesman David Lappin, L-A-P-A-N. At Customs and Border Protection, Julie Kirshner, K-I-R-C-H-N-E-R, the former executive of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR, has been hired as an advisor to Customs and Border Protection Acting Commissioner Kevin McAleenan, and M-C, capital A-L-E-E-N-A-N, said Lappin. The hiring of Feer and Kirshner at the federal agencies has alarmed immigrant rights activists. CIS and FAIR are think tanks based in Washington that advocate restricting legal and illegal immigration. The two organizations were founded by John Tanton, T-A-N-T-O-N, a retired Michigan ophthalmologist who has openly embraced eugenics, the science of improving the genetic quality of the human population by encouraging selective breeding and at times advocating for the sterilization of genetically undesirable groups, unquote. And from an article about the Pioneer Fund, from a Southern Poverty Law Center article that is linked to the written description for the record 1029, which will be available presently, of the Pioneer Fund that helped to finance the Federation for American Immigration Reform, that has links to people who have been appointed by the Trump administration. Between 1985 and 1994, the Federation for American Immigration Reform received around $1.2 million in grants from the Pioneer Fund. The Pioneer Fund is a eugenicist organization that was started in 1937 by men close to the Nazi regime who wanted to pursue, quote, race betterment, unquote, by promoting the genetic lines of American whites. Now led by race scientist J. Philippe Rushton, the fund continues to back studies intended to reveal the inferiority of minorities to whites. So again, the distortion of genetic research that we saw in the New York Times article from October 18th by Amy Harmon, and which academicians in that field have been kind of reluctant to confront. No surprise there, frankly. We are seeing basically the past is repeating itself. I'm going to just make an allusion to an article I alluded to in my last program from the New York Times of September 6th of 2018. The most inappropriately named Sweden Democrats did very well in the last Swedish election. How the far right conquered Sweden by Jochen Bittner, B-I-T-T-N-E-R, from the, again, the New York Times of September 6th of 2018. It talks about how immigration has produced relatively large numbers of immigrants in Sweden, many of whom have faced the difficulty of assimilating. And this has been exploited by the far right in Sweden. Does not mention that Carl Lundstrom, who financed the website on which WikiLeaks held forth, was a major financier of the Sweden Democrats. Now, interestingly, just as an immigrant caravan, unquote, has very conveniently emerged to give Donald Trump ammunition for the midterm elections, the very same day that Paul Manafort was convicted and that Trump attorney Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to a number of charges, there was a case that broke in Iowa. Prominent Iowa Republican family which owns farm where Molly Tibbetts' alleged killer works say he passed government's migrant background check as the 24-year-old is charged with her murder after admitting to, quote, chasing her down while jogging. And this is by Ben Ashford, Chris Pleasance, Jennifer Smith, and Hannah Perry from the Daily Mail of August 21st of 2018. This reminds me of Saran Saran, and whether or not Rivera was placed under mind control is something to keep in mind. Excerpt from the article, investigators say Rivera followed Molly in his dark Chevy Malibu as she went for a run around 7:30 p.m. on July 18th. He blacked out, unquote, and attacked her after she threatened to call the police unless he left her alone, officers said. It is not yet clear how Molly died. Rivera told police that after seeing her, he pulled over and parked his car to get out and run with her. Molly grabbed her phone and threatened to call the police before running off ahead. The suspect said that made him panic and he chased after her. That's when he, quote, blacked out, unquote. He claims he remembers nothing from then until he was back in his car driving. He then noticed one of her earphones sitting on his lap and blood in the car, then remembered he stuffed her in the trunk. He followed her and seemed to be drawn to her on that particular day. For whatever reason, he chose to abduct her, unquote. Iowa Department of Criminal Investigation Special Agent Rick Ryan said on Tuesday afternoon. Rivera stated that she grabbed her phone and said, I'm going to call the police. Rivera said he then panicked and he got mad and he blocked, unquote, his memory, which is what he does when he gets very upset and doesn't remember anything after that until he came to at an intersection. That is very similar to what Saran did in connection with the polka dot dress girl, as she has come to be known. Donald Trump seized on that, as we looked at in our last program, and as is excerpted in the written description here, turning very quickly as we wrap up the program to the polka dot dress girl and Saran. Saran, this is excerpted, dealt with at greater length in other programs. From Yahoo News of April 28th, 2011, convicted RFK assassin says girl manipulated him by Linda Deutsch of the AP. The papers point to a mysterious girl in the polka dot dress as the controller who led Saran to fire a gun in the pantry of the Ambassador Hotel. But the documents suggest a second person shot and killed Kennedy while using Saran as a diversion. Under hypnosis, Saran remembered meeting the girl that night and being smitten with her. He said she led him to the pantry I am trying to figure out how to hit on her. That's all I can think about, unquote, he says in one interview cited in the documents. I was fascinated with her looks. She never said much. It was very erotic. I was consumed by her, or Rivera said. He was drawn to Molly. She was a seductress with an unspoken availability. Saran maintained in his hypnotic interviews that the mystery girl touched him or pinched him on the shoulder just before he fired, then spun him around to see people coming through the pantry door. Was Rivera, who was working for some prominent Iowa Republicans under mind control, was this an op timed to eclipse the Manafort and Cohen legal difficulties? Certainly was exploited by Donald Trump. Well, we will never know for sure. This, however, concludes For the Record Program 1029. The Will to Create Man Anew, Eugenics Past, Present, and Future, being recorded on October 23rd of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.